the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, news from now from high octane, the world of Formula 1, to the high tech world of toys.
Chase, we've got to rescue those people. Are you up for it?
Chase is on the case.
Well, my next guests are a husband and wife team from County Meath. Their augmented reality toy business, Hollow Toys, is making huge waves in the highly competitive US toy market. Hollow Toys brings characters to life as 3D animations via an app. They have a new partnership with Mattel, adding Barbie and Hot Wheels to their offering. And they join me now, Kate Scott and Declan Fahey. You're both very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much, Richard.
You are a couple and in business. Kate, how did you first meet?
We met, would you believe, when we were about, I think we were 16 or 17. Declan and I both come from a village in Meath called Dunshaughlin. So we would have grown up, I suppose. We went to different schools, but we would have been in the same social circle. So we met, just on nights out. We had a great L nightclub in Meath called The Vortex, so we would have met a few times.
The Vortex.
Yeah. Only 20 minutes from Grafton Street.
Yeah.
The Vortex sounds like a great name for a nightclub.
It was very romantic.
What was it, love at first sight?
To be honest, it actually wasn't, Richard. I don't think we got on really when we first met. It wasn't until, fast forward a few years later, until we started both working in the independent news and media offices, that our relationship started to kind of grow, I suppose.
When you say you didn't get on, does that mean you didn't like each other or disliked
much,
each other?
Pretty much. Yeah, no, we just didn't gel, you know.
What was wrong with him?
I don't know. What was wrong with you? We won't go into that. I know, look, it's just funny, you know. Declan was kind of a DJ at the time, actually. He was DJ Reggie in Dunshaughlin.
I led a superstar lifestyle.
He did. And then when we worked together, we were about 3 years working together. We just became the best of friends. And we just actually work really well together, luckily enough. And we've been working together ever since then.
Yeah. DJ Reggie.
Yeah,
it's hard to shake that, I say, is it?
No, that's well and truly a solid name.
He's coming out of retirement now for a gig soon enough.
It's only my mother who really calls me Declan when I'm in trouble.
So you kind of knew each other but didn't really like each other from home. You find yourselves working in the independent together, and then you suddenly decide that you do like each other quite a lot.
Yeah, pretty much.
I suppose I used to give Kate a lift in and out to the office because obviously she was going the same direction as myself. So those car journeys, I suppose, changed our mindset a little bit more.
Yeah.
And you had been working there first, Kate, was it?
I was working there first, yeah.
So did you tell people that DJ Reggie was coming into the building?
I did. I warned them. I said, this lad now thinks he's the business, you know? And I did. I warned everybody so they knew what to expect. Yeah.
So where then did the business connection come from for both of you?
So, working together, I suppose, we just worked well together. Kate's job in the Indo was working on the creative team, and my job in there was basically sales. So what would happen, and which kind of just organically happened, was that Kate would come up with the ideas and I would go out and sell them to the ad agencies.
And then he would tell the agencies they were his ideas.
Pretty much, right. Yeah.
And that's still going on today.
That's still going on today, yeah. It's a formula that works for me. Kate has a great creative streak. And, you know, that's what led us to other ventures that we've had in the past. We also have another founder in the Hollow Toy business called Paul Cosgrave. And he also started another business with us called Bash Products, which basically allowed us to bring in partyware products like the world famous Red Cup. And we basically brought that into the UK and Ireland back in 2008. And that was our first business that we kind of started together. And
were you still working in the independent at
that
time?
Yeah.
And you were obviously sort of eyeing up an opportunity to have a business separately.
Yeah. So every weekend we would meet, the three of us, and we'd count cups, you know, split them. I would do the design, the packaging, and package them all. And then we'd get on to the buyers and do pitching and all of that. So that was a side hustle, I suppose, which was the first business experience that we had as a trio.
We learned a lot from that. We learned about how to deal with a buyer, you know, what they want, what their expectations were. just basically how to bring a product from, you know, manufacture to shelf.
And counting cups at the weekend is a long way from the vortex now, isn't it?
Exactly.
We've had some fun experiences in our time.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you kind of put the time in and the effort while you were still working. And then where did the whole animation idea come from, and the virtual reality, I suppose?
Yeah, so basically there's augmented reality and virtual reality, right? Virtual reality is where, you know, you put the mask on and you're switched off from the world that we're in. We both prefer augmented reality because you're augmenting the world with animation, right, that you're in. So kids aren't being switched off. My first experience with augmented reality was going back 15 years or so. I was working in an ad agency called Rothko, and we were working, one of our clients at the time was Irish Distillers, and we wanted to bring, I suppose, these art pieces to life with Absolute. And the idea came about that we'd bring it to life in animation, and it was through augmented reality that we did that. So it meant that basically it was an in-bar activation. People would come into the bar, hold up a device and see the art coming to life in animation. It was incredible. So this was the first time that I had seen this. And at that time, it was quite clunky. The experience was kind of glitchy. You know, there was big, you had to have big triggers and all that. And it's come so far since then. But that's, I suppose that was my first experience, and I've always loved that element of technology.
And you went to work with Irish Distillers then?
I did.
After the Independent, yeah?
So after the Independent, I worked in advertising agencies for about 4 years. So Rothko was kind of the most recent one before I went to Irish Distillers. And Irish Distillers were a client of mine, and then I went to work with them. Yeah. So
that sort of idea of using augmented reality kind of stuck in your own mind, did it, when it came to thinking about your own business?
It did. So I suppose... my passion was always trying to bring innovation to creative projects when I worked in advertising and in IDL. This opportunity came about because I had actually left IDL at the time. We had two young kids, you know, and I set up as a digital marketing consultant. And one of an agency that I worked with at that time when I was a consultant was a crowd up in Belfast called Yellow Design. When I was working with them, I did a research document on what was happening in the world of AR and VR and, you know, any kind of interesting case studies. And I came across a company called Skin Motion, who had created an app whereby if you got a tattoo of a sound wave and you scanned it, it would play the audio back, so you could record an audio and play it back, which was incredible. So, you know, if I had the kids saying "I love you, mommy," and get that sound wave tattooed and then scan it, you could hear their voice playing back, and I thought this was unbelievable.
So know. Declan, did Kate come to you and say we should look at doing something within this whole area?
So yeah, like, I mean, we would always, I suppose, not necessarily bring work home with us, but it's a conversation that always happens around, you know, it's like an ongoing chat with Kate, where it's just like, we just love creativity, we love innovation, and conversations kind of just spawn other ideas. That's the way we kind of tend to just talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So when Kate was doing this research document for Yellow, it was just AR at the time, that the technology was kind of pushing it further and further and further. And this new app was something that really kind of resonated with us, because we felt that you're simply looking at a physical thing and then seeing a digital enhancement of that, and it was something that kind of struck, it was just a really cool idea. So at the time, we were driving through up the Keys in Dublin. I remember it was the 18th of November 2019, and we saw a sign for Dublin Tattoo Convention. And we were like, here, let's go to this. There might be more kind of really cool tattoo ideas. And who knows, we might,
and
get,
I might get some ink.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we ended up going to the RDS, walking the floors of this tattoo convention. And we didn't really see, we were kind of disappointed because we didn't really see much innovation around kind of tech and how that can kind of work in such a creative industry such as tattooing. So it certainly spawned a conversation the way home in the car, where we were like, you know, it's a pity we didn't see much creativity around tech. And then we were kind of saying, but like, I suppose, who would benefit from that? And we were like, because I don't know if adults would really be into it, but children would, because it would be cool to see a tattoo come alive and run up and down your arm. And we were like, yeah, but you can't really tattoo kids, can you? And we were like, well, actually, you can, using temporary tattoos.
Yeah, and there are so, these transfers.
Yeah,
and
up to now, like, you know, tattoos were only really found in lucky bags back in the 1980s, and there wasn't really much innovation in that product, like, since then. So we just kind of, well, Kate, you jumped on the phone at that stage. You started researching to see if it was an idea. And we ended up finding a hashtag from a company based in Baltimore who simply created a concept idea around this. Never really brought it to market, but certainly, you know, executed it. So we knew it was able to be done, where they basically had temporary tattoos. You put on the skin and you hold an app over and the tattoo would jump to life.
And that was the kind of very... were you impressed with the tattoo convention, Kate?
Well,
no.
You see,
did you get anything?
I was really impressed because the level of talent is incredible. You know, just, I suppose, seeing what they can create, the artists are amazing, but just to be able to bring that to life and, you know, a step further, and it's a whole new way of looking at it, I guess. But no, the tattoo, I'd recommend anybody go and go to visit the tattoo convention.
Similar to a toy convention.
Yeah, well, toy conventions are something else altogether. Yeah. They are incredible. They are just
in what
amazing.
Way?
Well, you see all the new toys, you know, in the world, and you meet, you know, toy inventors, and some of them are obviously the big guys, you know, some of the biggest toy companies in the world, like the Spin Masters, like the Mattels that we all hear about. But then you meet normal people and normal families that are set up family businesses inventing toys. So it's just a really interesting space, but it's so creative, and it's the most creative industry, I think, really in the world.
It is a huge business, and it's a massive
global industry. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, what kind of people are involved in those businesses?
Oh,
are they a bit mad? Are they a bit eccentric?
They are a little bit mad, aren't they?
Yeah, you have to be a little bit mad to be a toy inventor, and that's such a cool community of people. Like, and they're really welcoming as well. I mean, we jumped into this industry not knowing a thing about toys, you know, and like we went over to Spielwarenmesse, which is the world's largest toy fair in Nuremberg, just to kind of give the idea a litmus test. And the inventor community are just so welcoming of their time, you know, and just really, really nice people. But it's a very family-run industry as well. There's a lot of family-based businesses in it.
And are people in it a long time? Would you meet people who had invented famous toys?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, within the first night that we were gone out with the toy community, we were sitting like next to the Rubik's team, you know, Rubik's Cube, you know, the Hasbro team, the inventors, you know.
They don't produce Rubik's Cubes, do they, sort of in the bar for everybody to
do? Well, they do have a night in the bar in Spielwarenmesse, which is an iconic night, which is usually on the Thursday night, run by Matt Nuccio, who's a big toy industry leader based in New York. But they do this kind of a game where basically you flip these beer mats off the table, and they have this kind of like competition who can flip the most beer mats, and they keep adding on a beer mat.
That one's low tech. That
was very low tech, yeah, but high skill.
We must bring tech to that.
Yeah, so, but it was amazing because there we were, you know, the first week in the industry, and myself and Paul and Kate, like literally flipping these beer mats, like, and all the toy inventors of the world, screaming.
DJ Reggie doesn't get to make an appearance, does he?
Sometimes, yeah, if they're lucky.
You'll be emceeing it now next year, it's like.
But when you started off, you made contact with that company in the United States,
yes,
and then that was a big breakthrough for you. So from there, you've grown and done a range of products and with a range of different distributors as
well. Exactly. So when we were, you know, basically the guys over in Baltimore said to us, look, give us a business case, you know, don't just hop on a plane and come over, we want to see what your plans are. So we took about 2 weeks out and we really worked hard on putting together a business case, and really what we were inspired by our own kids, Ryan and Emily, because we could see how much they love technology. They, like kids these days, they're growing up with it, you know, and they love the filters on social media and they love the animations, because we are very quick to call it technology, but really it's animation and it's magic to kids, you know. But we don't want them on social media, and I feel really, really strongly about that. We don't want them on the open web. I know there's a lot of conversations happening around that at the moment. So what we wanted to do was, I suppose, not let them lose touch with the physical world, physical toys, you know, and physical play, which is really important for their cognitive development. So we decided to create a range of products that would allow them to have that physical play, which is so important, and then enhance that with our animation, our augmented reality animation. So that's what we were inspired by. And so that's what we started doing when we went to Baltimore. We kind of presented our whole business case in terms of like how we could grow this, what kind of products we could do.
And so what are the kinds of products you're doing now, and where do you get those made?
Yeah, so we launched our range with temporary tattoos and stickers, books. We have educational books for kids around dinosaurs, sea creatures and pets that are really popular. And we've had really great feedback from parents, particularly from parents with children who have autism or maybe reluctant readers that find it difficult to read, that this is a whole new sensory experience for kids, you know, learning through reading. And then we have wall decals, and now with our partnership with Nickelodeon, we're creating a range of jigsaw puzzles and magnetic cubes. So there's more of that physical toyetic play, I suppose. So and then when it comes to Mattel, we'll be doing a fashion design toy as well.
And this week, products will be sold in Walmart. Definitely.
Yeah, big week this week in Holotoys. We're basically launching in I think it's 28 states in this through Walmart, in over 1,800 stores. So yeah, it's a dream come true. It's a real pinch me moment for us in the business to have a great partner like Abacus Brands in the States, be able to kind of take our products and present them to retail like that, like a giant like Walmart, is amazing.
Are you worried about tariffs on goods going into the United States? Is that a real problem potentially?
Look, it's a problem for everyone, no matter what industry you're in.
But where are yours made in?
So we have two manufacturing locations. We have, for our European market, we usually, depending on the product, but all of our printed matter usually is manufactured out of Barcelona in Spain for the European market, and for China at a Ningbo port for the rest of the world.
So tariffs, let's say, on goods coming into the US from China, you could be affected by
we will be affected by it. Saying that, our products, we do keep them pretty low price, okay, and because it's a percentage game, you know, it's not going to affect us as much as if we were producing toys that are, you know, $80, $100. The majority of our product is, you know, $20 or less. With the Mattel deal, we'll have a product that will be $30 on shelf. So it's not really that expensive that it's going to be, you know, detrimental to the business in terms of that tariff. Yes, it will be a challenge, but it won't be as big of a challenge as if we were, you know, producing products of a much higher name.
There's ways around it though. So for example, with the jigsaw puzzles, we can make mini jigsaw puzzles and maybe sell them at more pocket money price as well. So there are always strategies that you can work around.
You can think about that. Yeah. And is it difficult, Kate, because to do deals with these really big companies like Mattel and Nickelodeon, you have to negotiate a deal where it's your product, but you have to have their permission to use their characters, and you have to come to some sort of an arrangement around that.
Yeah.
How does that work, and is it hard to reach those deals?
It's very difficult. So being honest, Mattel took us 2 years to get. That was a labour of love. We had an idea for this fashion toy, and we wanted Barbie to be our product for that, you know, our brand. We were very lucky that Nickelodeon actually contacted us very early on in the business. After a year of launch, they contacted us and asked us to partner with them. So having a massive partner like Nickelodeon, Paramount, helped us to get the Mattel deal. So, you know, we've been very, very lucky on our journey in that sense. Yes, Mattel, there's a lot of work that goes into it, and actually really an awful lot of work has started on it now. You know, we have to create new 3D renders, we have to create all the animations ourselves, we have to create, you know, the toy obviously ourselves. There's a lot of work, there's a lot of moving parts in it. But when you do get that, and we actually met the team in Mattel in Germany at the toy fair in January, and they gave us a tour of their stand, and they told us that our products would be on the stand next year. And we asked them, you know, out of all the people that pitched for your brand, how many do you turn down? And they said we turned down 2/3 of the people that pitched. So it's amazing to be in the 1/3.
That was great. It's extraordinary, Declan, to have come this far as well with the business, and to find yourself in such a different world, from selling ads in the Indo, selling car ads in the Indo.
That's right. I started off selling car ads in the Indo. Yeah, on four courts.
Has it stood to you, that some of the things you learned about that?
I mean, the horse trading with a car ad on a forecourt in Ballyhaunas versus, you know, the same horse trading of a contract on a Mattel stand in Nuremberg.
The psychology is the same.
It's exactly the same.
It's the same charm that goes into it.
But to be honest, like, look, people buy people at the end of the day, and it's like, no matter what you're selling, it is all to do with how you have that relationship with people and how you foster that relationship. So, look, selling car ads, and I had a great educator in the Independent. Bernie Schweier was my first boss, and she taught me everything I know in terms of, you know, closing that sale and not ever walking away without the business. So
she'd be very proud of the deals.
Hopefully, yeah.
Well, congratulations and well done on the business so far, and the best of luck. Thank you so much, Kate Scott and DJ Reggie Declan Fahey. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.